Of course you could do without a hand or without a leg. But you couldn't do without a head, although most people seem to try to nowadays. But God is that entity which comprises the whole of the universes, and there are billions of them, and each universe and part of a universe is an essential part of the basic God. Question 4, will our souls live forever after we will graduate from this world? After so many lives we will go to better places. You have me convinced of that fact. How many worlds will we graduate to and where will we end? Yes, our souls will live as long as God lives, because our souls, our ovocells, etc., are just part of the fabric of God. If you stick a pin in yourself and withdraw it from your quivering body, it may appear that the pin is quite clean, bare of everything, but if you stick it in the field of a very powerful microscope, you may find one lonely molecule waving at you through the electronic magnifier. Well, that one lonely molecule can be just as you are to God. Question 5, I was brought up a Catholic and went to school in a convent. We were taught very little about the years Jesus had disappeared. Was he really in Asia learning during that time? So many books say so many different things about. 149. The subject. If he spent all these years in Asia, he must have liked what he learned. Of course, my entire conception of him has changed since I became really more religious, which has nothing to do with a particular religion. You will hear from me again soon. Now, I wonder if that last statement, "you will hear from me again soon," was a promise or a threat. I must think about it, but anyway, yes, Jesus the man wandered abroad in the wilderness being that part of the world which was not his immediate and familiar vicinity or the vicinity of his birth. Jesus went throughout India, throughout China, and into Tibet, and much of the original Christian religion is actually a conglomeration of Eastern religions which have been hashed up, worked over, and tailored to fit what is, in effect, a Western mentality. Most certainly Jesus liked what he found in the East, because after, according to the press report which I have already given you, he went to Japan instead of being crucified. After Jesus the man came back from his travels, he went again into a distant place where he would not be bothered by onlookers. And there he left his physical body and went on to other places. His body was taken over by another entity from space, as had previously been arranged. So Jesus the man departed his body, and the Spirit of Christ took over and became the Christ. That, then, is transmigration and nothing else. So many people seem to find difficulty in comprehending this matter of transmigration, but Christ taught it. Christ taught reincarnation also, and if people would read the Bible with an open mind, they would understand all these things. They should also take into consideration the definite fact that the Bible now is not as it was originally, nor how it was intended to be. The Bible has been translated, retranslated, mistranslated, rehashed, and thousands of different editions brought out. Sometimes the head of a church will say that such a thing cannot be taught anymore. Then he will scratch his own head and bring out something else which should be taught. The Bible should be looked upon as a general statement of policy rather than a blow-by-blow, round-by. 150 round account of what happened. It is quite a good book, but you have to use common sense in reading a book which is so old and which is so different in concept to that which is originally was planned. 151. Chapter 9. Hey! Screamed the words from the letter. How is it that you, who have been doing aura work for so long, never get a good write-up in the press? The old man thoughtfully pulled out a newspaper cutting which was stuck in the big envelope. It was from some paper called the National Enquirer, dated September 24, 1972. It seemed that some fellow was falling over backwards, frontwards as well, to praise up the Russians and their efforts in aura research. It purports to say that plants know when the weather is going to change. Well, of course they do. I have been saying that for years. It also says the plain fact is that the Soviets are years ahead of the US in research on ESP, in the fields of mind over matter, telepathy, etc., that we may never catch up. And the astounding color movies of the human aura the Russians have made show how far they have already gone. But, yet, I have been doing things like this for years. Anyway, I have had all the details about this fellow and the article before, and I wrote to him sending some of my books, telling him the truth as I have been informed of it. The Russians were greatly impressed with you forever and it sparked considerable research in Russia. The Russians have bought quite a lot of books and they have made good use of the hints, etc., which I have given. Yes, yes, it's just fine that the Russians are making progress, but why not give a little credit here as well? It does seem to me that people just go crazy with joy and delight if the com. 152. Communists of Russia copy someone else and find that it works, but now that I am a Canadian citizen I find that a prophet is without honor in his own country. I find my books are being quoted and quoted and misquoted with never a trace of acknowledgement to me, the author, but I suppose that is the way of life. There is another hook eulogizing Russian science and the remarks above also apply to that book. I sent some details to the authors of the book, but again they did not even have the common courtesy to reply, not even the courtesy to say thank you. I have come to the conclusion that I must be some sort of a nut for answering people's letters and saying thank you if they send me a cutting or something. People have told me that, by the way, that I am a nut for bothering with so many people. Never mind, it might help someone. But I do want to put on record that the Russians do not have a monopoly on aura research. The Russians do seem to have a monopoly of finance to help research and without money to buy equipment, well, many a promising invention has been stillborn. That is what I am finding now. There is a telephone to heaven and a good aura camera, because the stuff the Russians are doing so far is not the true aura but the sub-etheric auric sheath. They haven't got down to the real thing yet, but they might in time. Another letter asks, is it true that most of the great leaders of the world were tradesmen, and if so, why? Well, yes, you can say that. You can say that most of the great leaders of the world started from what are called humble origins, and there is a special reason for that. It is thought by the gardeners of the earth that those who come here to help humanity must be in touch with the majority of humans, and if a man comes as a king then in the normal course of events he is only in contact with those of kingly, princely, or ducal status. Jesus was the son of a carpenter. Possibly he took a swipe or two with carpentry tools himself. We never hear that he was a carpenter but only the son of a carpenter. Muhammad, who was one of the great people, was an Arab tradesman, and then at the age of 40 he began to have all sorts of messages and conversations with messengers. The content of the May 153. Senjus' instructions led him to organize the Muslim religion, and write the Quran. Moses, well, he was just a homeless waif who had the luck, good or bad, to be picked up by a princess. But the point is that he was still a homeless waif who had the common touch. Gautama, of course, was a prince, that is he started off a prince. But he soon found that as a prince he was not in touch with the common people, so he renounced his princely caste and went into the wilderness away from his bunch of wives who made quite a commotion about being left husbandless. But in spite of great efforts to persuade him to change his mind, Gautama went into the wilderness as a poor and humble man and became the Buddha, the founder of Buddhism. He had to renounce his high estate and relinquish his wealth before he could indeed get in touch with the ordinary people who most needed help. Here is a question which I frankly do not quite understand. The question is there an absolute possibly existing somewhere in the seventh through the ninth dimensions? Now, I do not understand that one because what is an absolute? I wonder if the person who writes means a god, and if that is the case, well, the answer is no. Even the manas go up much higher than the ninth dimension. The manas that one can experience looking after this world, for example, they are the puppets of an over-self Manu. Now here is a question for you. Are there less and less laws governing an entity the higher up on the evolutionary scale he goes? Yes, basically that is so. The laws are actually made to control the masses, and often a law which is most beneficial to a mass of people is horribly unjust to some poor wretched individual. But laws cannot be made to suit each and every individual. A law has to be formulated so that it may embrace the great majority of people coming within its dictum. If you had read the 1972 tax forms, you would know what I mean. The instructions about this wretched form are so abstruse that I honestly can't make any sense at all out of it, and I imagine that there are many more like me. But back to our question, the higher a person evolves, the less the need for. 154. Stereotyped laws to control his behavior, because when he reaches a high enough position, he knows instinctively what he should do and what he should not do, and he doesn't need the disservices of lawmakers to tie him up in red tape and so ruin whatever it is he is trying to do. A question: does it become proportionally easier to evolve the higher the plane of evolvement? Well, that is relative, you know. You have to keep in mind that the higher you go, the greater the distance that you can fall, but I can only answer this question by returning to the classroom. If one has a child at school studying, then he is trained to study, trained to remember, trained to absorb information. If the child then leaves school and takes some ordinary job such as an office boy or something, then he lapses and he gets out of the habit of studying, so that if after a few years he has to study something, he finds the process remarkably difficult and painful. If a child is studying and continues to study, up and up through high school, through university, perhaps on to medical or law school, then the child, now young adult, is trained in studying and he finds it easier and easier to study as he studies more and more. So you could say a person who is consciously, continually evolving, and not backsliding, can evolve more easily than those who are dragging their feet. But if the person does make a mistake and stops his own evolution, then he may go in reverse, he may go the wrong way and lose much of his evolution, so then he has to come back and relearn his lessons. By that time he will find they are much harder. A question is, do all human entities possess an astral body? Oh, definitely they do. Everything does, not just humans but all animals, even rocks. Everything vibrates. There is no such thing as a stationary object in existence, such a thing is impossible. Every single article that there is anywhere is in a state of constant molecular motion. You might look at a mountain and think it is just a stupid lump of rock stuck in the middle of a landscape to prevent you from seeing what is at the other side. But it is not like that, it is a great mass of. 155. Vibrating molecules, and the action of all these molecules vibrating together is to set up a form of electric field which gives an astral body and also an aura. So the answer is, yes, everything has an astral body. Everything has an aura. Sometimes I get taken to task, although, I must admit, in the kindest ways, for apparently repeating myself. I am told that I tell the same thing two or three times in two or three ways, but then I get a letter from a person who tells me that he or she is very grateful that I have repeated myself, because at last I have got through and made a point. The first and second attempts at explaining weren't successful. The third was. But now I've got a question: would you please again explain how to control one's mind, how to direct thought? Now I have already dealt with that quite a lot, but I have definitely been asked to repeat it, so all you people who do not like repetition, read on, because you might just learn something. We have to remember that we are only 1/10 conscious, and the real source of knowledge, the real source of action, is the subconscious. But the subconscious is like a lazy old man who wants to sit and smoke a pipe all day and not do anything. He knows he is the custodian of great knowledge, etc., but he doesn't want to part with any of it. He doesn't want to move. So you have to get through to him to galvanize him into action. If you want to direct thought or control your mind, then you have to know what you want, because it is useless to seek a thing unless you know what you are seeking. Otherwise, if you do not know what you are seeking, you won't know when you have found it, will you? Let us suppose you want to learn something. Well, You sit down somewhere where it is quiet and you think of the matter which you desire to study. Perhaps you are afraid your memoir will fail you or something, but anyway you think of the matter you desire to study. Tell your subconscious what you want to do, tell your subconscious why you want to do it, say what benefits will be derived from learning such a matter. You have to get it over to your subconscious that you and George or Georgina are all part of the same firm, so what harms one? 156. Harms the other, what benefits one benefits the other, so you have to think about the thing you want to do, you have to think about it directly, you have to think all around it, you have to think of all the advantages. Then you have actually to visualize yourself studying the subject or possessing the object, and if you make a real campaign about it, do it perhaps 3 times in succession, the subconscious may be roused and will then help you to attain that which you desire. You have to go in for visualization. Now, visualization is not imagination. Imagination is something which can be indulged in on the imaginary basis only. No amount of imagination, for instance, would enable you to jump over a 30-story building. You might be able to do it in your imagination and then you would be something like Buck Rogers, wouldn't you? But such a jump, over a 30-story building, is beyond the laws of physical nature, so it is imagination only, and many people waste time imagining that which is impossible. Visualization, on the contrary, is something which is entirely possible because it is entirely in keeping with normal physical laws. As an illustration, suppose you want to buy a boat, then if you visualize yourself suddenly coming into possession of a large sum of money and going to the place where they sell boats, looking over them, and finally deciding on such a boat, then you may find that your visualizations bear fruit. It is a fact that if the conditions are right, anything you visualize you can have, in time. It may not be just at the moment you want it, but you will one get it, if you visualize things properly. You have to sit down comfortably. You have to cross your ankles and clasp your hands in front of you. Then you put out a very strong thought to your subconscious, calling him or her by the private name which I suggested earlier in this book. You tell your subconscious 3 times, attention. 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 Then you say, look into my mind now. You repeat that 3 times, and then you think very definitely, very clearly on the matter for which you desire the cooperation of your subconscious. Let us get back to pendulums. You want your pendulum to tell you where such and such a thing is, so it might be a lump of gold, and in that case you will tune your pendulum for a lump of gold. I told you how to do. 157. That earlier in this book. Then you will visualize yourself holding the pendulum by its cord in the swing indicating gold. You will pick up a map and you will try to locate gold through the use of the map. If you convey the idea with complete clarity and point out the advantages to the subconscious, then you will be able to detect gold if there is any there. Then a question about the coming world leader, will his life be made as miserable and horrible as yours? Will humanity listen to him or will they again just scoff, laugh, demand proof, and scream their nasty heads off? Will he be born in a country that is politically acceptable to the rest of the world, or will he have to suffer from discrimination too? I will tell you this, that world leader is not any of those over-publicized young people who are screaming around with much press publicity that they and they only can save the world. No. The real world leader is living privately as yet unknown to the world. When the time comes, and then only, will he move into the limelight of unwanted publicity. Yes, he will have suffering, he will have misery, he will be disbelieved, he will be pilloried and persecuted by the press. But, if his message gets over to even 1,000 people, he will not have been here in vain. At present there is such a person on this earth. The body is being developed. At the appropriate time transmigration will take place and a greater entity will come down and carry on from that point. You get something the same in surgery or in art. You get a lesser skilled man to make the opening incision, sorry, no pun intended, And then when the basic work has been done, the master will take over and do that for which he has been acclaimed as a master. After the master has done the successful operation, some lesser surgeon, for instance, will stitch up and generally clean up the mess. It is the same thing with the leaders of the world who come here and take over a body which is already trained to operate on the earth. It would be such a waste if a great entity had to spend about 30 years kicking about on this crummy old earth of ours. That is why such people take over by transmigration. I have some questions here from a gentleman whose name is famous in connection with tea bags. He wants to know about 158. Longevity. He asks, some people are under the impression that due to modern medical science it is possible to live longer at the present time than, say, 200 years ago. Is the answer no? We can just get a maximum lifespan and it cannot be exceeded, but if we are foolish enough it can be terminated prematurely? Could those early deaths in olden days be due to poverty and improper living conditions, etc.? Well now, actually in theory there is no limit to how long a person can live because it all depends upon the memory stored within our brain cells, the memory which enables the body to reproduce identical parts. If we had a good enough memory, and a subconscious memory it is, a person could go on living almost indefinitely. Unfortunately at the present stage of evolution the memory decays. It is like the old army story. There was a long line of men, 100 men in a row. An officer at one end of the line whispered a message to the man nearest him and told him to whisper it to the next man, and so on. And then the last man produced a message which had little bearing on the original subject. We get the same thing with humans. We can say that a patch of skin has worn out and the body entity wants a repair job done. But the memory is a bit sick of all these repetitions, so there is a slight divergence in the type, texture, or color of the skin. So the person might get one of those brown patches which are a symptom of increasing age, or a fastidious lady may get too much skin and find she's got nasty wrinkle, and so she spreads a lot of goo on her face to try to shrink the skin. Eventually there will come a time when people can live 500 or 600 years. And it will come about not through anything special in the way of surgery or medicine, but through a development in electrochemistry, because if we could get our chemical balance right we could get our brain voltages correct, and in that case cancer, schizophrenia, and other things would be cured. For example, a person gets overtired with too much work so his body chemistry is depleted of those chemicals which build up the necessary voltages to keep him in operating condition. Now if the person suddenly takes in some sugar, for example, provided he is not diabetic, he gets a sudden spurt. 159. Of energy and the tiredness goes away for a time. In other words, his battery has been recharged and he functions again on the normal level. My old friend, Jim Dodd, who lives in America, has just sent me a copy of a newspaper cutting about electrical medicine. And Jim Dodd is highly interested in my comments because he has had a knock on the noggin through a car accident, and from what I can gather from his letter the surgeons just about filleted him, but kept only the bones. An unfortunate state for a person to be in. Now, presumably, if he walks down the street the dogs come after him to take a chew at the bones. But there it is, it makes one think, isn't life wonderful? But this cutting about electrical medicine is only the stuff I have been telling you about before, saying, we seldom stop to think that our bodies run on electricity. But they do. And Jim Dodd wants to know if there is any truth in what the author of this article writes. The answer is, yes, there is a lot of truth in it, but the sad thing about the whole affair is that medicine generally is at least 100 years behind the times. Orthodox doctors dare not risk their reputation in even attempting anything which has not been approved after 10 years used by some of the trade unions controlling doctors. Oh yes, let's bear in mind constantly that doctors have trade unions even more powerful than the Teamsters unions, and they are kept rigidly in line. Some of the medical members of the doctors unions have nothing on Jimmy Hoffa for discipline. But that is taking us away from this stuff sent by Jim Dodd. Yes, one can do a tremendous amount with electricity. Electricity, properly applied, can speed healing, can the more easily unite broken bones. At one end of the scale there is electrocution when a fellow is literally knocked out of his body and his astral goes wandering off. At the other end of the scale people could even be helped to get born by electricity. Jim Dodd is particularly interested in electrical anesthesia, and the article which he sends seems to be very much out of date, or, like a fat woman seen from the back, all behind, because electrical anesthesia is a definite proven thing. Two electrodes are placed beside the head and a mild current is switched on, a DC current, and the patient or victim goes. 160. Dreamlessly to sleep because the astral says, in effect, gee, I don't like this, it's too hot for my feet. I'm going. And so the astral gets out of the body in a hurry and doesn't return until the current is switched off. Actually, if a person knew how he could put anyone to sleep without any difficulty at all, that is one of the dangers because now, well, we all know the old story of the white slavers with their chloroform pad. They swipe someone across the face with a cloth soaked in chloroform and the poor innocent defenseless girl goes to sleep instantly, but that is not so, you know. It takes a long time to put a person to sleep by that method. It is easier to use a coal hammer. Hey though, don't go trying tricks with electricity, or coal hammers, because it is very, very wrong indeed to commit suicide, just as wrong as it is to commit murder. So when you read these electrical details don't get crazy bees in your bonnet because, I repeat, suicide is a very bad thing indeed to do. But if a person knows the very simple technique of electroanesthesia, just about anyone could be taken unawares and put to sleep. Possibly that is why doctors are so cautious about it, they probably want to have some rigmarole or ritual so that it appears to be more difficult than it is. What can be done is this, a patient, let's imagine this, shall we question mark is wheeled into the operating room annex. The anesthetist just puts two little electrodes at carefully determined spots on each side of the head. The current is switched on and the patient is asleep as quickly as switching off a light, no gasping, nothing of that kind at all, the patient is switched off when the current is switched on. Then, with the operation finished, the current is switched off and the patient awakens instantly without any recollection of pain or anything else to do with the operation, and, interestingly enough, the painlessness effect lasts from 12 to 20 hours during which time the patient is fully conscious and sweetly reasonable, that is, of course, if he was sweetly reasonable before. But this form of anesthetic will come into use eventually. It is just a matter of breaking down the bonds of prejudice and unadulterated fright. It is too much like electrocution, isn't it, to lie down and have someone put it? 161. Electrodes on your head and then switch on the current and, bonk, you are out. Electric induction of anesthesia is a great blessing in operations to the liver, the kidneys, etc. In kidney operations it is necessary to have a terrific amount of chemical or gaseous, same thing, aesthetic, but the poor wretched kidneys which are being operated upon have to suffer the operation and also have the task of eliminating the chemicals used in the anesthetic, and that makes it very, very difficult. Further, getting such a load of noxious chemicals in one system can upset or possibly the answer to the Lord's Prayer would be more one's metabolism no matter what the operation should be, whereas in electrical induction there are no chemicals of any kind because, going back to our radio days, when the electric current flows through certain conduits of the brain it just acts in the same way as the grid bias battery of the old radio receivers one used so many years ago. It set up a back pressure of current which prevented the flow of brain electricity which meant that a person was conscious. And that is all there is to it. No pain, no suffering, no drugs, no chemicals, only sound sleep without any after effects. So there you are, friend Jim Dodd. When you read this you will have your answer. It's a pity you couldn't have had this stuff when you had your operations, eh? Let us continue with some of our questions and answers, which seem to interest an astonishingly large number of people. So here is a question about exorcism. The question is, a number of men of the cloth claim to have performed this operation, some with great success. Others admit to poor results,